From KRCB in Santa Rosa, it's Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour with Michelle Anna Jordan.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available real-time traffic alerts. More at Acura.com/RDX.
You better come home in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining, I do.
Tonight on Mouthful, we'll be talking with Mick Brigden about two of my favorite things in the world, wine and really good music. So stay tuned for the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour.
You're shoving all your sausage and your meatballs.
A little bit of wine.
A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, 'tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. What a glorious spring day it has been. The temperature's inching into the high 80s, maybe even into the low 90s in some places. But all in all, we've been really lucky so far this year. No crippling extremes of temperature so far. It's been really nice. The farmer's market today was absolutely beautiful and complete with the maypole tradition going on at the Sebastopol Farmer's Market now for a while. My guests tonight, actually we have two guests. We have Mick Brigden and Julia Brigden. We have Brigden Vineyard, which is located up on Napa Springs. It was in between Spring Mountain and the northern part of Sonoma Valley. Is that right, Mick?
Yeah. It's actually, if you take, you know, the Calistoga Road between the two valleys, we go up the first hill and we go off onto a ridge that overlooks the Sonoma Valley, but it's about 5 miles up that road to Spring Mountain. So halfway between the two valleys.
Really beautiful part of the wine country. On that note, welcome to Mouthful.
Nice to be here. Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
And you have this beautiful array of things set on the table. Including Owl Ridge 2003 Cabernet Sauvignon. Why don't you tell us about that? Because that's really what got you here.
Oh, yeah. That's actually what got us here to Sonoma, actually, because we, Julia and I, moved to Sonoma with the idea of relocating so we could have land, so we could grow grapes and other types of agriculture, which we'll talk about. And, you know, we were going to plant a vineyard, but we didn't really know anything about, you know, the whole process. So we came in as rookies and we hired some good people to help us because we might have made some huge mistakes, and we didn't. We planted the right grape clone with the right rootstock, but we didn't know what we should do. So someone else did the soil test. Someone else told us what we should plant.
And what year was this?
That was 1999 is when we planted, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we moved up to Sonoma County right after that, built a house. And now we had what we always dreamt of, which was a home surrounded by a vineyard and the chance to expand into other kinds of, you know, products. And the vineyard, you know, 2002 gave us its first fruit, which we found a great winemaker. I think you know him, Joe Otis.
Yes, and he's been here on Mouthful.
Yeah. And Joe knew our vineyard manager, so he brought this new winery owner, John Tracy, into the picture, who was looking to source some small vineyard, you know, small producing vineyards of cab, so they could make a high-end cab. And we didn't have a contract, and we were just getting to know people, and we kind of fell into the right person's hands at the right time, I'd say, because we didn't want to let our fruit go out and just be, you know, mixed, blended with everybody else's. But we didn't really want to take on the production ourselves because we didn't know enough about it. So we became partners. So we became partners with Our Ridge on this product. But they do make some wonderful other wines with some other grapes that they source from other people. But what we've found is that by working closely with Joe, he, you know, manages our vineyard manager's, you know, execution of keeping the grapes in the best shape possible to get the most out of them, which sometimes means, you know, giving up quite a lot of grapes to get to the kind of, you know, fruit character that he wants, which is painful. Painful to drop grapes in the middle of August when you have, you know, a nice harvest going. But, you know, come November when he's harvested and he's, you know, starts fermenting, then it's, you know, it's been the right decision every time. Mm-hmm. Joe's making great wine. The 03 is the second of our vintages. The 02 was really good, but it was very small. We made 100 cases. The 03 is the one that we are very proud of. The 04 is in the bottle. It hasn't been released. And we love that as well. The 05 is in the barrel. The 06 is in the barrel. And the 07, today we were walking through the vineyard, Julia and I, and wasn't it looking good?
Yes.
And tell us how it looks.
Well, you know, we are, as you said, coming into a very warm spell, and, you know, the shoots are just shooting out. So we had to shoot thin yesterday. Our vineyard manager came in with the crew because the last week, since the heat wave got a week ago, since we had rain, since we had heat, everything's just bursting. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a vineyard, like all the other, you know.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Wildflowers.
Suddenly the roses all seem to have bloomed at once.
Yes. Yes. So we've got, you know, we've got fruit coming in, you know, the berries are tight, little, you know, green berries. And, you know, the shoots, like I say, you can actually almost watch them grow at this time of year. If you sat there for an hour, you would see it. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a nice way to slow down time, isn't it?
Fabulous.
Yeah. Well, since you're talking about this wine, why don't you pop that bottle open?
That's a great idea.
Let's see how it tastes.
Yes. And here we go.
It's one of Mouthful's favorite sounds.
Michelle wants me to try to do this next to the mic. So we're going to do it. How was that, Lawrence?
Beautiful.
That was just excellent.
So, 1 second, I'm going to.
You can pour it in exactly
the
same way.
Yeah, so we can get the full character.
That looks good. Not too full.
Sounds good.
Sounds wonderful.
Good. It's a wine that sounds good as well as it looks good.
We'll pass that over in this direction.
And uno mas.
Get them soused.
You know, I will actually take this moment to also, because we're on the air, we mentioned Joe Otis, great winemaker, making some great wines. But I got to mention my vineyard manager, Dennis Nunez. Because really, you know, people like that are the ones that are the unsung heroes.
Yes, the people who take care of the grapes.
My God, you know, the winemakers, you know, they become rock stars in Sonoma County. It's famous, you know, they become famous people. You know, the guys that stand behind them, you know, in the trenches are the, you know, vineyard managers and their crews. And, you know, if it's 5 a.m. and it's fog and it's freezing and they're out there pruning, you know, that's, you know, without them, you know, we wouldn't be able to produce this kind of product, so... Mm-hmm. Going to drink to them,
yes,
if we may.
We will drink to them. Thank them for their hard labor.
Can we do
labor.
This on the air, too?
You bet. There we go.
And then a sniff and a swirl and a slurp.
Now, as we're concentrating, or as we're letting these flavors unfold, why don't we play our first song? Because we're going to do a little bit more music tonight than we normally do on Mouthful, because you're involved and have been involved for a very long time with the music business. So this first cut from a demo...
Yes, the first cut. A very good friend of Julia's and mine, his name's Glyn Johns. Glyn is most likely the most he's recorded more people who've become famous than anybody I know. He recorded Led Zeppelin's first album, Eric Clapton's albums, The Who's albums, The Eagles albums, Steve Miller's albums, The Beatles albums, The Stones albums, The Clash. I can't think of any more at this moment. But what we're going to play is something he gave me that has never been heard on any radio, I bet, anywhere. It's the Rolling Stones' first demo that they recorded to get a record deal.
To be loved. I'm crazy about every little thing you do. I cherish the way you hurt me. Your kiss is so sweet, honey, can't be beat. But baby, I want to be loved. Every time I ask you for a date, you don't come at all, almighty late. I ask you to dance, take a little spin. You say, wait a minute, daddy here. My friend, I love the way you walk when you pass me by.
Wow, the unheard Rolling Stones. That must have been, what, 1963 two, or two?
Three? Late 62, early 63, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, the Beatles' first hit was like 62 and the Stones came in right behind them. So, you know, I mean, I was listening to English bands on the radio. I mean, I didn't work with the Stones until late 70s. So by then, you know, they'd become a totally different band to that little blues band.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you get your start in the music business?
Let's condense this because we don't really have all night.
We'll just hijack Outbeat.
I left England when I was 19 to go to Canada because a friend of mine found out that we could get a free ticket from the Canadian government. And we were art students. And everyone in England was art students in 1964, 65, 66, 67. In 67, I went to Canada and hung out with a bunch of bands in Canada.
The Haunted, by any chance?
No. I don't know.
They're
who
one
they
of the only Canadian bands I know.
No.
They do a really great version of Purple Haze. It's called Vapeur Mauve.
No.
They do a French language version.
I have not
version.
Heard of these people.
Well, I'll take care of that.
Yeah. No, in Toronto at that time. The biggest band in Toronto that for that year was a band called Kensington Market. And they were produced by a New York producer called Felix Pappalardi. And hanging out with them led me to meet Felix. And Felix asked me to go to New York and help him put a band on the road for a tour. And I didn't know why he asked me, but I said yes, because I wanted to go to New York anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That band, the third show they played was Woodstock, and they became very big. And I stayed with them for the next 2 or 3 years and didn't go back
their
to
third gig
commercial
was, yeah. And you're gonna draw it out. You're not going to tell us instantly who it was.
Well, you know, the name was Mountain. This band was a big, heavy rock band. Mm-hmm. Do you know them?
Yes.
Mississippi Queen was their landmark single.
Mm-hmm.
And they made 2 or 3 good albums. They were an English version of Cream, and Felix had produced Cream. He was their producer.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to develop a sound of a band in America like Cream because Cream broke up.
Mm-hmm.
So he found a guitar player from Long Island called Leslie West who played a really, really good sounding Les Paul through a Marshall that sounded like an Eric Clapton sound and wasn't Eric. He was his own guitar player in his own right. But the band had a huge success very quickly and Woodstock was the reason because they were really, it was their third show and they came out that night and they played an amazing set. And from then on, they were a big band all over the Northeast, and then it spread around the world. So I just tagged along with them. I became their road manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of learned how to do everything, like tune guitars and mix sound and, you know, drive the truck and set up the drums and pick up the money and book the flights and, you know, whatever it was that was needed to be done. Because in those days, nobody was called a tour manager. Nobody had tour accountants. Nobody had production managers.
Mm-hmm.
You had a road manager, and he did everything. But he was a bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took about another 10 years for everything to become really sophisticated. So I was kind of there as the business was growing. And I was very lucky because I actually enjoyed it a lot. I didn't mind the long hours. I didn't mind, you know, there was some good stuff as well, obviously. It wasn't hard work exactly, you know. There was some
fun. It's probably a fair amount of fun, yes. Now, when did you and Julia meet?
On the second show of that tour. July of 1969 at the Fillmore West, because Mountain was opening for, I think, Steve Miller or someone like that. And Julia had met a friend of mine from England that I grew up with who worked for another English band, Procol Harum. And we just got to know each other at that moment, and we've been friends ever since. But we actually, because I lived in New York and she lived here, we didn't get together till another 10 years later or so. So, you know, actually more than 10 years later. But we have known each other since that one wonderful moment when I got into the Fillmore West in San Francisco in 1969 and realized that San Francisco was the place to be.
What was it that made you feel that way?
Me.
There you go.
Clearly.
You know, it was the place to be. San Francisco in the late 60s, there really wasn't anywhere to compete with it. And I'd lived in London, I'd lived in New York, so I had some comparisons. There was nothing like the freedom you felt, the great vibes you felt, the good vibes you felt, you know. Mm-hmm. The music was part of it, but it was everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just a whole thing.
Life here.
Yeah. And I couldn't wait to get here to work, but I didn't get that chance immediately. And then Bill Graham did call me in 1975 after I'd been working for a couple of other bands, English bands, and been around for quite a long time by then, so I knew a lot of people. Bill called me and asked me to come to San Francisco and work for him, and that was, you know, that was my golden ticket. That was my Willy Wonka golden ticket. I got to go to San Francisco, greatest place on earth, work with Bill Graham, who was the guy in the music business. Mm-hmm. He was the legend, but he was also the guy you could learn from. And I was going to, you know, end up doing what I wanted to do in the place I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
And was it everything? Has it been everything you've wanted it to be?
It's been more than that, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
It's opened up so many, you know, chances, opportunities to do things and be, you know, places that I, you know, people, you know, just can't imagine what it's like. But, you know, now when I look back, it's like, wow, I really have a wow moment every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Remembering some of the things that happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you tell us about this next song that we're going to hear, and then when we come back, we'll talk about some of these lovely foods that are involved. This is Mouthful on KRCV. So what's this next song?
The next song is from a band in England that was a big pop band in 1966 called the Small Faces. The lead singer, Steve Marriott, ended up forming another band, Humble Pie, that I was their tour manager. That's the word. For many years. So Steve and I were very close for many years, and this was him at the age of 18 showing how he had the most incredible, soulful voice for a little kid from the East End of London. So it's him singing Tim Hardin's If I Were a Carpenter, which I just discovered on a CD yesterday while looking for material.
But as we start our finale this week, here's more of the great group sound of the Small Faces. This is a fantastic, raving version of the beautiful hit song, If I Were a Carpenter.
If I were a carpenter, and you were a lady, would you marry me anyway? Would you have my lady? If I were a miller, and a mill wheel,
Small Faces, If I Were a Carpenter. Oh, I love that song, and I have never heard that version. Okay, Mick. Mick Brigden of Brigden Vineyards, Julia Brigden. And I know, Julia, you do a lot of things, not just with wine, but with food. And you made this beautiful Membrio, right?
Yeah.
And we should say, Membrio is sometimes called quince paste. Membrio, the Spanish name. It's a beautiful sort of golden color. Mine, I've made it at home. Mine turns really deep, dark brown. I don't know, maybe I'm cooking it too long. But this is really beautiful. It looks exactly like what I've had the couple of times I've been in Spain.
Mm. Well, you know, every time I make it, the color changes a bit. So mm-hmm. I don't know what the chemistry is behind it. But that happened to come out that nice sort of amber color.
And it's from quince that you grow
right
at your estate.
Yeah. Well, when we were moving up here to Sonoma County, I was very reluctant, and Michael kept saying we were going to, or Mick, I should say, kept looking for properties with a sort of 100-mile radius out from San Francisco, and I kept smugly thinking he's never going to find a piece that's going to fit my criteria, because I did not want to leave Marin County. Anyway, He found this piece of land up here and...
What were your criteria?
Had to be near enough to school, a proper school, because our son was 11 at the time, and it had to be close enough to town, and it had to be relatively civilized, and it had to have a paved road, and... He kept coming back and saying, oh, we found this fantastic place. It's 20 miles up a dirt road in a pine forest. And I'd say, yeah, I'm not going to live there. So I was very confident this wasn't going to happen. But unfortunately, he found this piece of property. And I've always really loved gardening. However, when we moved up here, we didn't know anybody at all. And started putting in fruit trees. And I just somehow, I just became totally enamored with the whole process. And I'm originally from South Africa, and South Africa is a country of farmers. And I think that gene just woke up when I arrived here. Mm-hmm. And it was, it's been really exciting. I love living here. I love living on a farm. And I took a bunch of courses at Schoen Farm in organic gardening and whatnot. And so we have a pretty big orchard. Well, big for a single family. I have maybe, I don't know, 35, 40 trees. Mm-hmm. Cherries, peaches, pears, quinces, apples, almonds, pluots, plums, apricots, etc.
Quince.
Kiwis, passion fruit, raspberries, blueberries, and I have a pretty big vegetable garden. So,
How is the fruit looking this year? I know last year was, most of the people I know who grow stone fruit, last year was not a great year.
Last year was a bad year. And the apples were terrible. Mm-hmm. And this year, the trees are just exploding with fruit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's I was out there.
Knock on wood, it's going to be a good year for stone fruit. You also press your own olives, is that right? You press olives, you make olive oil? Because I've got to taste some.
I think we have 150 olive trees now.
Okay, and where do you make your oil?
At Glen Ellen.
The olive mill?
It used to be the olive press.
It used to be the olive press, but they're moving.
They're moving to the new Klein Winery location down by Cornerstone.
Oh, they are.
Have you seen that huge winery Klein's building called Jacuzzi?
Oh.
Anyway, what's his name? The guy who owns the olive press. He's moving there. And there's another person who's already moved in and put a new name, you know, shingle up. So I'm most likely going to stay with them because I love Deborah. Mm-hmm. She's really knowledgeable. So I need her because she tells us when to harvest. And she puts us in with other people if we don't have enough for our own single. Mm-hmm. This is a blend of ours and two other farmers who have the same varietals.
And what are the varietals?
Frantoios, Lucinos, Pendolinos, Barbacinos, Morellos. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a mix of Italian and Spanish varieties.
Yeah. Mainly Italian, Tuscan style, with only a couple of Spanish in there. But I mean, we got 150 trees. We'll be able to produce our own single, you know. Vineyard or single olive orchard, I guess they'd call it.
Yes, olive orchard.
Very soon. But Deborah's been great. She's been very helpful.
And eggs as well.
And eggs as well.
Tell me about your chickens.
They're my pets. They're my babies. And I just find chickens really amusing and fun.
They are so fun. If you've never got a nice low chair, something cold to drink, sat down in the shade when the girls are out pecking, they are endlessly entertaining. They're mesmerizing. Yeah. I can watch chickens, the ones that get to run around. Yeah. I can watch them for hours.
And you know, they have a whole, they have a vocabulary. I'm very intimately connected to their vocabulary.
Yeah.
We talk. And you have to understand that Mick travels a lot. And I'm up there on the hill on my own.
Talking to your
dog,
chickens.
So, you know, it's the chickens and the fruit, I'm afraid, and the dogs.
And why don't you open up the carton? I just want to look at the eggs.
You have to admire their colors.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're quite beautiful.
Oh, they are. They're huge. And some of them are huge. Some of them. So you have Araucanas.
I have Araucanas. I have the ones that look kind of chocolate colored are from a chicken called a cuckoo moran. And the smaller eggs are from a sort of a crossbreed of Araucana and some sort of banty.
Well, they're beautiful. They're all uneven sizes. They have little things stuck to them. They are like the perfect eggs. They're exact. You know those eggs are from happy chickens.
That's right.
They get to run around and be themselves.
Yeah.
Do you have chickens?
I don't have chickens. I need to be two people.
You've had them though.
I have friends who've had chickens. Uh-huh. I have so many raccoons and other animals where I am. I would need a carpenter.
It's a perilous life out there.
Yeah, and I would just, if I had chickens and, you know, the raccoons or whatever got them, I would just be so devastated. So right now I have friends with chickens.
No, we've been through that. Julia
we
has
have
suffered.
Tragedies.
She's suffered for her chickens.
How many do you have?
Well.
Currently?
Currently, as of this week, I have just six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, are you doing all this, the olive oil, the membrillo, eggs? Are you doing this all just for yourself and your family and friends? Or are you?
Yeah.
You don't have a
farm
stand?
Well, I sell some of Bob's fruit stand occasionally.
Uh-huh. What sort of things? The eggs?
Well, I had a huge collection of heirloom tomatoes. A couple of years ago that were very popular.
And now Bob's Fruit Stand, of course, on 4th Street.
And it's on Highway 12.
Highway 12. Near Mission.
Near Mission.
Very popular place. Been there a long time.
And he's a great music guy, too. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
But I think I probably met Bob in connection with KVRE or something like that.
It turned out, when we first met him, that we had a lot in common. Mm-hmm. It was a music connection and a food connection like you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think that a lot of people who came up here, one thing that Sonoma County had in the 70s, you could get KSAN in most places, but there was also KVRE with Ed LaFrance. And as, the 70s morphed into the 80s, funny how that happens, and KSAN died in the late 70s, KVRE was really the radio station. And it was, I mean, everyone I knew listened to it, and it really created this sense of community. And people worked in restaurants, and, I was running a restaurant, and a couple of the three DJs, I think, from KVRE worked at the restaurant that I was running. And it was just this great, tight-knit community that was a great deal of fun.
Yeah. Now, that's before Doug and Bill.
Doug Smith came right around that time, and even Lawrence, Mouthful's engineer, was a customer at the restaurant, and Doug Smith and Bill Bowker were at Studio Cafe.
Yeah.
And by then, KVRE had gone the way of all good radio stations.
Yeah.
And so Studio Cafe was cable only, and that's what we listened to. At the kitchen of the restaurant. And I would call Doug every morning. It's like, hey, what's going on? And discovered that we had very, very similar tastes in music.
Yeah.
We love Doug,
I guess probably also knew Dick Tyne.
We didn't know him as well, but we listened to him. Uh-huh. You know, when we first came up here, we discovered The Crush within a week or so. And it's like you were talking about having KSAN in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we moved here and we found Crush had the kind of music that we wanted to listen to. Mm-hmm. It's, it helped us through the day, so to speak. You know, in the morning drive, take the kid to school, there's Doug.
And KRCB, of course.
Thank you. Yes.
But we called Doug.
Uh-huh.
I called him because someone said, well, you should meet him. So, he just said, well, come over. We'll go to the Omelette Express and have breakfast, And then Balker came into our lives. So now, Bill and,
Bill and LaVonna.
Bill and the station, I was going to say. Mm-hmm. But, Doug, because Doug's not there. They've just become part of our lives in this county.
Scott Murray was another one. And Scott Murray did a show here. He was KRCB's first general manager.
Yeah.
And he had been on KVRE long before that. And he works in the public defender's office now. But then Dick Tyne goes back to early KVRE. He came out here from Boston. And
Dick would throw curves when he's playing songs on the station that I could tell this guy really knew. Depth of music.
Yeah, absolutely.
I loved that in him.
Yeah, he really, really did. Yeah. And that was a great loss, not just to the Crush, but a great loss to
fortunately,
the music
community. Pam is wonderful.
Pam Long.
So,
morning show host and also now program director, really good program director.
I'm so
glad
that she's come back
from New Zealand. Yeah. Yeah, that's really a good thing. It's interesting to see. I mean, you first came to San Francisco in the late 60s, and here we are. We know so many people in common, and there's the threads. There's the thread of wine and food and enjoying life in that way, and music. Those seem to be the threads that bond all of us together.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, tell us about this next song that you wanted to play.
What is the next song, Lawrence? Oh, well, here's a little story for you guys. The next song's called Quicksilver Girl by Steve Miller. It's on his Sailor album, produced by my old friend Glenn Johns, who we just talked about. But the song is about my wife, Julia.
Oh, it is?
Because she was, her nickname is Girl, and she was married to the bass player in Quicksilver Messenger Service, and she was called Quicksilver, well, she wasn't called it. Steve Miller called it. So this is the song for Julia.
She's a Quicksilver girl, a lover of the world. She spreads her wings and she's free. She's a Quicksilver girl, a lover of the world. She's seen every branch on the tree.
You're listening to Mouthful. I'm here in the studio with the Quicksilver girl herself, Julia Brigden. And Mick Brigden. We're talking, well, we're sort of talking about Brigden Vineyards, Cabernet Sauvignon that goes into a wine produced by Owl Ridge. But we're also talking about life in the music world and the North Bay. Really makes me feel lucky to be here with reflecting back on all of this.
Yeah, we are lucky.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about the wine.
Okay.
One of the ways it's described, and I've put some tasting notes here somewhere. Where did I see that? Anyway, described as blueberry and licorice. And I find it interesting, licorice, and by licorice I don't mean licorice candy, I mean licorice root. Mm-hmm. I'm finding licorice root coming up as a descriptor in a number of red wines in this area. Mm. And I'm wondering if it's the way, you know, you can influence, so, you know, if you say something, then other people perceive it. And are wine writers influencing each other? Or is there something, is there really something to this? Are we starting to really see that one of the expressions of this terroir is licorice root?
That's something I really couldn't answer in truth.
No, I'm just sort of wanting you to sort of speculate.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm hearing that comment and seeing, you know, those words. I didn't know if it had appeared in other people's, you see.
Well,
that's what I meant. I mean, I had no idea that it was like possibly actually something that is terroir-driven, as they might say.
Well, I'm just starting to wonder, because it's something, you know, I do my weekly food and wine pairing column. And also, was either last week or the week before, I was at the Green Valley Symposium.
Yeah.
And we tasted a whole lot of Chardonnays and a whole lot of Pinot Noirs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I found that was common throughout the Pinot Noir was, I think it was the 05 vintage, was black or licorice root, true licorice root.
In the Pinots.
In the Pinots.
Okay.
And very subtle, but it was there. And I happen to know what licorice root tastes like because I like it a lot, and I like to make licorice root tea.
Yeah.
But I've noticed it, and I've noticed it in wines from this area increasingly lately.
But where do you grow licorice?
You know, I think this. I've read about some licorice root in the south of France.
Yeah.
I don't think it's produced there.
Have you, Julia? You were out of the room for a minute. Do you know where licorice might grow?
Well, isn't it made from anise or fennel?
No, there's actually something also called a licorice root itself.
Oh, is
you can
that right?
buy it in health food stores, and you can. And it looks like a twig.
All right.
It looks like a twig that's about a quarter inch around.
Or you can get it ground. Does it in fact taste like?
It tastes exactly like black licorice.
Right.
It tastes like it's actually slightly sweet.
Really?
And if you brew a tea out of it, it's pretty sweet. It's really pretty
sweet.
But
I wonder. Julia said anise. Is it possible anise is giving us that sensation, that taste?
I don't know.
Because we have a lot of fennel. We don't have a lot of fennel in our vineyard, but you have fennel.
We have fennel
wild
that grows around here. Fennel
in
is
Sonoma.
Fennel and anise, they're both a little bit different.
Yeah.
This to me is really licorice root.
I know. I can tell why people say that, but I didn't know it was more than just in our wine. I didn't know it was showing up in other parts of Sonoma.
Yeah, and I'm just curious. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Just I like to speculate about.
Yeah, what
things.
Else? What else did you read there? Let me hear what else they say.
Oh, actually, but I lost my.
I'm curious.
Here we go. It says blackberries and licorice.
Blackberries, yeah,
and
blackberries. You often.
It's sexy, lush, and silky.
Mm, that's kind of like us.
Okay. Well, that's definitely that's Julia's part of the wine. She brings that into it.
For 2003 Cabernet, the tannins are absolutely smooth and silky. They're not fuzzy or rough.
I know.
You know, they don't.
I don't know how Joe does that.
Yeah, that's really quite nice.
The thing is, it has a lot of body. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you take the tannins away, it wouldn't be as full as it is, right? But they're not in your mouth like unbearable. They are smooth, like you said. So I got to give him credit for figuring out a way to do that, to bring that blend. And it's very young.
Like, yes, it's very young, 03.
I mean, most of the reviews are saying this wine is young and it'll just be better. Give it another few years. In fact, I think Wine Spectator or someone said 010, you know. It's like another seven years from when we bottled it, you know. But 3 years from now, boy, time is moving fast. But anyways, the quality of it now is good. So if they're saying it's going to be that much better in a few years, well, let's come back and do this again. Let's come back and see.
Because, I mean, it's a deal.
I mean, I'm learning as we go along, Michelle. Mm-hmm. You know, I really don't have enough experience in – I'm not a winemaker. I'm a grape grower now. And so I'm learning as we go along about what's happening in the vineyard every year, you know.
I'm curious about something. Did you grow Cabernet because the piece of property you bought was ideal for Cabernet? Or did you buy the piece of property because you like Cabernet?
The former.
Okay. Okay, so if you would have ended up with a piece of property in Sonoma Coast, we might be talking about Pinot Noir right now, something like that. Okay.
Yes. Exactly.
But we wouldn't have bought a piece of property on the Sonoma Coast because we don't like the fog.
Because Julia wouldn't have wanted to drive, remember that
Right, you don't want to drive too far. They're not school. No fog. You know. And if you get above the fog line, and you can on Sonoma Coast, get there's a vineyard up above the fog line. I think it's on King's Road. And St. Francis Winery is producing really extraordinary Cabernet from this particular vineyard.
Where is it?
I think it's on King's Road. It's very high and very hot. And right now the name of the vineyard is escaping me. I may think of it before the end of the show.
Right.
But it's really a schlep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a short drive, and you have to be very high up to be out of that fog influence.
Yeah. Beautiful, but slog. And you got to go miles on some two-lane road to get to the local store,
which
won't be as good as the local stores might be that we have here.
No, you really need to be pretty self-sufficient to live up there.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, which we're getting close to with our eggs and...
Yes. Anything? What else? Anything that we should be talking about from the garden, from the land that we're not looking at?
Well, we don't have any livestock. That's something that Julia, I'm not going to speak for you, Julia, but... We're not planning on that, are we?
I've always wanted baby doll sheep, but there's no way to keep them out of the landscaping, so I guess not. You know, these baby doll sheep,
you can have them
graze the vineyards.
Yeah, Deborah Walton at Canvas Ranch has a flock of baby doll sheep.
Yeah,
and
they're so
actually
cute.
Rents them out or, you know, takes them to various vineyards to let them graze the weeds.
But you know what we do have is what I saw the other week at the bottom of our drive is a mountain lion cub.
A cub? You saw a cub?
That was pretty wild, yeah.
How big?
It was about, you know,
so a teenager.
On the radio,
big
I'd
enough.
Say
yeah.
Like two and a half
feet long and about 2 feet tall.
Yeah.
So not a baby, but a
need to be careful.
Pretty young.
Yeah, teenager.
Need to be careful when going for a short walk with the dogs in the evening.
Uh-huh. Right, yeah, sunset. Yeah. Sunset and dawn are the two times you want to be careful.
Yeah. Don't go out alone, Julia.
It's good that, you know, I think it's good. We want the animal.
Yeah.
We don't want to drive out
every
other
species.
Yeah,
I thought it was thrilling, but it did give me pause.
Sure, of course.
Now, the biggest problem are wild turkeys.
Yes.
They are a problem.
Wild turkeys in the spring. Yeah. I wish they would quit trying to mate with my car.
Oh, yeah. but they're
it's like, look, it's. Have you ever seen a lime green turkey, you idiot?
Yeah.
I drive a little Beetle.
I saw it. It's cute.
And they just, I mean, they'll come, and if my window's down, the male, he'll try to poke me, poke my eye out. And just, we probably have about 22 where I live right now.
Yeah.
They live in the trees. And they eat all of my white alpine strawberries.
Oh.
Every last one of them.
Oh.
They get them all.
Yeah. Well, they ravage the vineyard because they're just the right height for the clusters.
Oh, they can just go through and clear them out for you.
You know, so I burden it. You know, and that's because more because of the turkeys than any other birds. Because we don't have a lot of starlings.
At what point in the growing season, right when they start to ripen?
Yeah.
That's when you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when you
because
know.
You know from birds, the fruit's fine until it's the day that
until
it's
until you want
to
eat it, yeah.
Or the day before you want to eat it, actually.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And then they suddenly know it's the same time.
Exactly. They're doing their little taste tests.
Yeah.
How many acres do you have?
We own about 30 acres, and we farm about 6 or 7. Most of the rest of it is kind of wooded. It's wooded and kind of steep. It drops down very steeply. It wouldn't be suitable for any kind of, you know, farming.
Mm-hmm.
But the 6 or 7 that we have, it's plenty.
That's plenty.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. And about how much, I'm not sure, I mean, do you measure by ton? How do you? Okay. How much are you getting out of the vineyard?
Well, very low yield right now. We, you know, our soil is volcanic and, you know, which is great for producing wines of character, but not high yield. So right now we're just producing around 6 tons. So that's, you know, under 2 tons an acre. Our vineyard manager and I talked the other day, and he hopes that we should be able to, without losing quality, get up to 3 tons an acre. So we might be, you know, at that point getting 500 cases. Right now we're at 350.
350 cases.
Yeah.
Okay, and of course it's all made by Owl Ridge.
Yeah,
all
it's all, yeah, I mean, it's not blended, so I mean, it's 100% of ours. So good things are happening, and the consistency that they're producing is important to us, and they're doing a great job with that.
What does it sell for?
It's in the local stores at $50 or $55 retail.
Okay. Yeah. And if you want to know more about Owl Ridge Wines, you can go to the website. It's owlridge.com. Pretty easy to remember.
There you go, yeah.
Owlridge.com.
And did you see that article? It was also in the same food section about that. You know the apple production facility on the Grabenstein Highway?
Right, yeah. Yes.
That's where they are. Because
right.
a lot
yes,
of that
they,
feature
they
was
the,
about them.
Yes, yeah. And they have the custom, they do custom crushing there.
Yeah. There's a lot of good people in there. Mary Edwards is there. Costa Brown's there, I think. There's a lot of people there.
And also in that same facility is Redwood Hill Farm Goat Dairy is in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice use of that space. It was so sad when that space closed.
Yes.
But it's nice that it hasn't been raised and, you know, condos put in or something.
Yeah.
It's still in agricultural use.
Yeah.
So that's a really good thing. Yeah. Okay, we're going to shift gears again back to music because we're going to play another song, one more song in before we go. And you've worked with, among other people, Bob Dylan.
I did spend a couple of years in the 1980s where we worked with Bob. But the record we're going to play is because of my love for Bob Dylan, which goes back to the folky, but this is the electric Bob, and this is Highway 61 Revisited, which means a lot to me. In England, when this record came out, this changed a lot of our minds. I mean, our whole world, it changed. So we're going to play Queen Jane Approximately. Yes, Alice Smiling.
When your mother sends back all your invitations, and your father to your sister he explains that you're tired of yourself and all of your creations. Won't you come see me, Queen Jane? Won't you come see me, Queen Jane? Now when all of the flower ladies want back what they have lent you.
Queen Jane Approximately from, of course, Highway 61. It's great to hear that song on the radio. Sonoma Coast Vineyard we were talking about. It's Kings Ridge.
St.
Francis, Kings Ridge Vineyard, Cabernet.
I'll look for it.
Really quite a lush, silky
Cabernet.
Not that that refers to anything that we're talking about right now. Anyway, what's next? What haven't I asked you that I should be asking you?
Julia.
What do you do now, Michael?
What do I do now?
Are you still
what are you doing in the music business now?
There we go.
Okay. Well, you know, after the 25 years or whatever with Bill Graham. You know, Bill died in a helicopter accident in 1991. And then I stayed.
91?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So I stayed.
That just doesn't seem.
I stayed with the company, and the company and I and the ex-employees and I, you know, we kind of took over from the family that, you know, Bill's family weren't, you know, in a position to run the company. So we had a great time for the next 10 years until, you know, it went corporate, which, you know, I was, you know, I was part of the fact that it went corporate because, you know, somebody came along and bought the company, made it corporate, and it became a publicly owned company. But then that was time for me to leave. And at that time, we had a great management company. We had the Neville Brothers, Train, at the Jim Blossoms in the early 90s. And all along, there was one guitar player called Joe Satriani, who I've managed through the company and now still manage. Joe is my client. He tours the world. He puts out records every year or two, puts out DVDs, puts out all kinds of other stuff. He's the most wonderful person, great friend. And I'm so happy that, you know, I've found somebody that I can actually enjoy working in the business still after 35 years and still get to do what I'm doing while I'm here at home with Julia and Jack, our son, and the vineyard. So having one client allows you to do that. When you're a big company with lots of clients, you don't have time for a personal life. So now I've got a personal life, and I've still got a relationship to someone in the music business, so I still get to go around the world and see audiences, enjoy music.
And you grow wonderful grapes.
That's great. That's good.
So can you
And
really...
olives and tomatoes.
So you're really putting the concept of a gentleman farmer to very good use. Do you go back to England very often?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, friends, not so much family anymore, but friends and business, we go there, you know, every year for sure, you know. And the rest of Europe, too, because these days all our friends in England seem to have moved to the rest of Europe as well.
Oh, really? So. Where have they moved to?
Most of them have moved to different parts of France because it's close enough to England, but the weather's better.
And the food's better.
Yeah. That's sort of my dream, you know. That's where I want to live. If I could live anywhere on the planet, I would be there in a heartbeat.
Anywhere particular?
There's so many parts that there I are. Like. Knowing myself as well as I do, probably Brittany or Normandy, because I actually do like the fog. I could live in Paris. I could live in Epernay. I could live in Aix-en-Provence. I could probably live anywhere that they speak French. You know, it's a language I love
it's
a great deal.
It's the language, yeah.
And I like French people. I say this all the time on Mouthful, but I really mean it. I like their expectation of pleasure.
Yeah.
They expect that life is good. So when it is good, they don't make a big deal of it, but they don't feel guilty. Yeah. And I just think that's such a great way to live.
Yeah.
So that's my advice for the day on that
that's
note. We're just about out of time.
Thank
Mick
you.
And Julia, thank you so much for taking time. And
it's been our pleasure.
Nice to finally meet you, having really special friends in common. And I should say, for people who are listening outside of the area, we didn't mean to go all insidery on you. Both Dick Tyne and Doug Smith were DJs for a long time in the North Bay, and both died in vehicle accidents a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So that's the story on that. And if you start talking about music, you're not going to go into a conversation for more than 5 minutes if you're talking locally without their names coming up. So that's the story on that. You have a great week. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. And meet me back here next week for another tasty episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour.